Largest wildfire in all of Texas history. And, you know, I mean, yeah, almost a million acres, you know, in terms of size, not the largest in terms of casualty, thank goodness, but in terms of size. And, you know, I mean, that's larger than the largest ranch in the United States, which is King Ranch in South Texas, which is, I think, about 800,000 acres. So,
okay,
it's crazy.
Yeah, and for perspective, there's 640 acres per square mile. So 600, if you're talking about a million acres, that is about 1,500 square miles. Now, Rhode Island, I think, is just over 1,000 square miles. What's Delaware? So you're somewhere between Rhode Island and Delaware. And I don't know how many head of cattle you said got burned up. I'm not going to make any jokes about hamburgers or whatnot because, you know, the cattle are living animals. They're God's creatures, and so I'm not going to joke about that.
We don't know yet. That's the thing, because the fires are still going. They haven't been even controlled yet. They're still going. So we don't even know how many herd of cattle had died. And, you know, I mean, no doubt this is going, this, you know, at the very least has to open up the possibility of, well, was this planned by the you-know-whos, the you-know-whats? You know, the people in, you know, as, you know, some people would quote the scripture and say, you know, wicked people in high places. That was, you know, one of the Bible verses. And I think the book of Ephesians talks about it. Wicked people in high places, they planned this, you know, because of what they've been talking about for the past, oh, I don't know, almost a decade now, about global warming and climate change and how it's all caused by, you know, whether you believe in that or not. I mean, clearly it's not, you know, cows that are the cause of it. And they're basically saying we have to, you know, eliminate all the cattle and, you know, we all need to be eating bugs and living in pods in our 15-minute cities and all that. So, you know, no doubt this will lead to, you know, at the very least, the possibility that this could be planned.
So I know hardly anything about what's going on there. Your gut instinct... Do you think it was planned, or do you think it's just one of those things? What do you think?
Well, I don't know. It's very hard to tell. One thing I do know, or I have observed, though, is that the weather, you know, is getting more and more extreme and more, you know, how should I say this? It's in terms of magnitude, it's getting larger, whether it's wildfires or snowstorms. I mean, you know, just take the state of Texas, for example, you know, right after 2021, you know, right after Biden was put in, you know, Texas had this huge snowstorm that literally knocked out their power grid. Because I guess in the United States, there's three power grids. There's one on the eastern mm-hmm. states, there's one in the western states, and there's one in Texas. Well, the snowstorm, this huge snowstorm, just destroyed the power grid down there. And, you know, the people down there didn't have electricity. And, you know, some people, the ones in the cities, the big cities like Dallas and Houston, they suffered worse than, you know, the rural farmers and cowboys. But, yeah, it's
is not very good. But that's not what we're talking about here. By the way, I remember in 2012, was it? Flying over the Texas Panhandle and looking down, and the Texas Panhandle was absolutely full of wind turbines. I think that is that is the center. That's the most productive wind power generation part of the United States. Maybe, probably there's places in China that have a higher concentration. Because China is the world's leader in wind power generation. But in terms of America, it's Texas Panhandle.
Well, the Texas Panhandle is the southernmost part of the Great Plains, which is where, you know, that's where much of your wind currents are formed, in the Great Plains. And it's because of that that wind in that area. I'm not a huge expert on wind turbines, as, you know, the audience can probably tell, but I do know in you know, high plains, you know, tend to have more winds. And what, how are, you know, fire started? Well, it starts with a fuse combined with high winds.
Yeah.
You know, dryness and high winds is a big, is a huge combination for wildfire, because, you know, the one thing I read about the Texas Panhandle is it's very dry. It's extremely dry. And then you have that wind, you know, generating that wind, and that is a spark for a wildfire.
A couple years ago, my dog crew and I went down to Texas to visit Mark Vankoff. Now that he's in San Antonio, that's not exactly the panhandle, but we went by the RBN studios in Round Rock. And that day I went by RBN studios. That was the hottest weather I had ever been in. That's not rhetoric. I saw bank thermometers, you know, where you go by the bank and it's got the thermometers, 110. It was 110 in Round Rock and Austin, like the road between Round Rock and Austin. And I remember I was out in the rural area and it was really dry and really hot. But you know something? There really wasn't a huge amount of vegetation either. Like when you're talking about California, for instance, there's more vegetation. When you're talking about maybe Montana or something like that, these are forests. There's a huge amount of vegetation. The only time like I said, I've flown over the Texas Panhandle. I've gone through Amarillo.
Amarillo.
I've been through there on a Greyhound bus, but that was like 40 years ago. You know, there's kind of scrub there. The thing is, like, how much is there really to burn? I'm asking that seriously. How much fuel is really there? You know, you compare it to Montana or compare it to California, or where else have they had wildfires? I mean, obviously they had these fires in Hawaii, but that was probably more houses and things that were burning.
Well, from what I hear, there's a lot of grass, you know, low grass. You know how on the prairie there's the low grass prairie, and it's basically, I mean, it's very dry, and that's basically how it burns, is because it's so dry and, you know, so windy. But there's just enough. I mean, it's the Texas Panhandle. It's not quite a desert. It's not like New Mexico or Arizona or even, you know, far west Texas like El Paso, that area. It's part of the Great Plains, which it's much drier than, you know, the eastern states and, you know, near the, you know,
right.
in the east, but it's not like you know, desert dry to where nothing grows. It's not like Death Valley, California, or the right. Mojave Desert in Nevada. It's not like that. There's still vegetation, and there's a reason why the Great Plains, I mean, is, you know, used to be the, or and still is, the breadbasket of America, because that's where a lot of the crop production comes from. One thing I did read about too is in that part of Texas, in the Panhandle, there's a lot of cotton there too, and the cotton, you know, is pretty flammable.
Cotton is flammable. So, like, for instance, with the California, there's enough vegetation that the fires get intense, and there's no saving the houses from them, right? The fire comes, and those houses are going to go. I know in some places there are strategies for keeping flames away from houses, such as doing either like some sort of preliminary burns or somehow getting rid of the combustible vegetation around the house so that a fire burns around it. Like, I would think that these Texas wildfires wouldn't have huge flames the way they would in more forested areas, because there's just not that much fuel. But what's the situation with, say, property damage, of houses, of buildings?
I think, I read that, entire towns, you know, the Texas Panhandle, there's many small towns around Amarillo. I heard entire towns were evacuated. And it's got to be, I'd say, at least several hundred homes probably have burned down. But in terms of casualties, human casualties, there haven't been that many, fortunately. But just the property damage. Texas, it's an interesting state. I mean, it's, you know, from what I hear, it's like you got extreme weather from one end or another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one day there's a big snowstorm, then there's a wildfire, and you know, summers are extremely hot, as you experienced, and then winters can be very cold, and I don't know. I mean, it's a very strange state, I'll say the least. Definitely, worth visiting though.
Yeah. Well, okay. When I was a kid, I had a friend named Paul, and his father, I think his father worked for Henry Kissinger on the National Security Council, but, he was a Boy Scout, and he was good at making fires, but he was also kind of a pyromaniac. And we, our scout troop was honored, with playing a role at the 1972 January 73 inaugural for Richard Nixon. And I remember Paul and I picking up, there were a lot of American flags. Now my brother and my mother were in the demonstration against the inaugural, because you know, they were against the Vietnam War, it was still going on, but I was part of the inaugural. But at any rate, Paul and I picked up a whole bunch of American flags that had been strewn on the ground, and we actually got accommodations for it, and we got some recognition. Somebody saw us picking up all these flags. Of course, the thing is, actually, Paul just went, he just took them home and burned them. Not for any political reason, but just because he liked burning things. So the reason I'm bringing up Paul is because he was kind of a pyromaniac, and one winter, it was kind of dry, he set this field on fire because, you know, he was always playing with matches and Zippo lighters. We had Zippo lighters back then. We were Boy Scouts, and set a field on fire. And I remember burning, but you know, there just wasn't all that much fuel, so it spread real fast. And then some guy came over, a couple guys came over and helped to stamp it out. But there just wasn't. It wasn't like an inferno or anything. So, I don't know. I'm just bringing that up. One other thing I'm going to bring up. You mentioned the extreme weather. And I know I am probably, what do you call it? I'm unusual in RBN in that I do think there's man-made climate change. Because we got 8 billion people. When I was born, there was 3 billion people. Now there's 8 billion people. And all the industrial activity, all of the change in habitat. I mean, all these forested areas that used to be forested. I mean, even before the Industrial Revolution, you had places in China. Let's get to China. You had places in China that were, in 2,000 years ago, that were lush and forested or, you know, productive countryside, and are now, because of all the, you know, centuries and centuries and centuries of cultivation and whatnot, they're kind of deserty. You know, places like Xining, where else, Lanzhou, these places, they were, a long time ago, they were real.
Kind of interesting because there's actually a huge project going on in China now where they're trying to greenify deserts. And they're trying to, plant more trees in the desert and basically do research as to, you know, how we can successfully, you know, build a forest out of a desert. They got some really interesting, very, very high-tech scientific innovations going on over there, even when it comes to ecology.
Yeah. But, I bring this up. And that being said, there's no doubt that climate change has been weaponized for nefarious political purposes. I think that's something we can all agree on. But my point is, if it was proven that human activity is changing the climate, does that mean that it's okay to genocide white people? Would that make it okay?
Well, if any human population is contributing to climate change, it's the third world. It's the third world populations, especially that of sub-Saharan Africa and India, the Indian subcontinent. Those two places especially.
Yeah, but I mean, and that's true. I mean, Africa in particular, you do have a massive increase in the Indian subcontinent for sure.
Which is why, by the way, I do support, global development or, development in the global south in Africa and India. So that way their populations will go down.
And in India, it's happening. India in particular, but Bangladesh, the birth rate's gone down. Pakistan maybe is lagging a little bit. But the thing is,
it's not going down fast enough.
Yeah, not well, but faster than most people expected. I remember taking in the late 1980s, taking this international economics course, and it was about it was about development. And at that time, in the late 80s, people, like the global south, all over the global south, Latin America, South Asia, of course, Africa, everywhere had these huge birth rates. But the birth rates have gone way down virtually everywhere except Africa. And Africa, it just,
yikes.
I'm not young enough to use the N word, but these N words be something. I'm not sure, but they be doing it. And, there's no stopping them.
And the problem is too, Western liberal generosity, with all their, medical technology and everything. The problem with sub-Saharan Africa is their birth rates keep going up, but their death rates are going down.
Yeah,
and that's causing an imbalance in, kind of their ecosystem over there, which is why it's very crucial. That's why, China developing Africa, as a Chinese nationalist, why would I? I would naturally think, well, why the hell should we care about Africa? Nothing's gonna come up.
Pick to smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story, it's something I wrote years ago. Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. And will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive if the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now, or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades' experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge, and I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214. Or by email at KettleMoraine, Ltd. at Cox.net for private consultation. Once again, our phone number, 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
China developing Africa, as a Chinese nationalist, why would I, I would naturally think, well, why the hell should we care about, Africa? You know, nothing's going to come of it. You know, sure, we can develop their infrastructure, but it's all going to go to crap once we leave. You know, just like when the Europeans left, it all went to crap. But at the same time, it's like, well, if China is able to infrastructurally develop Africa, then maybe their birth rates will go down, because that's what happens as a result of development. The birth rates go down.
That is usually is what happens. And birth rates amongst American blacks are not particularly high. They're higher than whites, but they're not that high. And I think in the Caribbean, like places like Jamaica, they're not particularly high. But Africa, they still are. Now, Africa,
the thing is, American blacks don't live that long because, they get into gang wars and shootings and violent crime toward each other. So they don't live that long.
Yeah, the male life expectancy for African American men is short, but it's not falling. Now, white men have a longer life expectancy, but that life expectancy is falling. It's currently falling because of fentanyl and suicide, and maybe alcoholism, but certainly fentanyl and suicide. But at any rate, like Europeans and whites in general got really involved in Africa, and it's been a disaster for everyone concerned, pretty much. Oh, well, maybe, I mean, actually, like, Africans, maybe it hasn't really been a disaster for Africans, but I think it's been a disaster for certainly for Europe. and for the world in general.
For the whole world outside of Africa.
You know, so it depends. Like, what do you think of what is one to think of the life that Africans were living when they were encountering the rest of the world, say in the 1800s? You have this. There's this book that you can find it online. It's called Negroes in Negro Land, and it was published maybe in the 1880s. It was in the 1800s. I think the later 1800s. And it's a collection of accounts by both European and Arabs who were exploring the interior of Africa. And it describes just very common violence and slavery and cannibalism, and life just seemed really cheap. And
essentially just like, you know, another animal, you know, would live. Not to degrade them, but that's what they were, or what, you know, and in many cases still are. It's basically just like how, you know, beasts will live, basically.
And then so, how great was that? I don't know. For an African who was living those circumstances, would that have been a nice life? I don't know. Maybe if the N-words be willing or something. I don't know. But
all I could say is a lot of this I do partially, not more than just partially, do blame on the Anglo-Saxons, on the British Empire, because their problem was that they thought that they can turn these African into civilized English gentlemen, you know, with their technology and medicine and Christianity, and they thought by bringing, you know, but pretty much all these things that come out of white Western Christian civilization, give that to Africa and they'll become just like, you know, just like Englishmen, just like us, you know, Anglo-Saxons. So I blame the British, you know, for thinking that they could just lift up these sub-Saharan Africans to their level, you know, lift up these savages. that's who I really blame, are the British.
So you do have certainly a streak amongst the British or the French, who are the main colonizers of Africa. And maybe there's a role played by Christianity and, you know, seeking souls to save. Now, I've never been to South Saharan Africa, and it's very possible that despite relative poverty and things like that, maybe it's not such a bad life for the people who live there now. Maybe it's a lot better than it used to be. Maybe it's not such a bad life, even if it's would be what we'd consider poverty. I don't know. I'm not in a position to judge. But what I will say is that Western colonization and post-colonization and involvement in Africa has certainly been a disaster for the West. Whether it's been a disaster for Africa or not, I'm not in a position to say. And if China is going to dominate Africa, all I can say is good luck. You know,
and be careful and don't get too close.
Yeah, well, maybe they'll do better. And one thing is the Chinese have their own experience of clamping down pretty hard on their birth rate, not through development. Like typically, you think of development first, and then the birth rate falls. But China did it, cut the birth rate, and then they had the development. Or maybe
their thinking was that's the only way we can develop is if we have, you know, I'm not saying I agree with this necessarily, but what I'm saying is the way that Deng Xiaoping and the reformers, their mindset was in order to lift our nation, lift our people out of poverty, well, first
once
of all,
a jolly swagman camped by the billy bong under the shade of a coolabah tree. When he sang as he watched and waited till his billy boiled, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
there. Are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Ease-Off.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized, my lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email proudsouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Casting dot. Mama!
I'm not saying I agree with this necessarily, but what I'm saying is the way that Deng Xiaoping and the reformers, their mindset was, in order to lift our nation, to lift our people out of poverty, well, first of all, we have to, you know, control the birth rate, the population, because if we, you know, keep allowing, you know, our own people to have as many children, well, most of them are going to starve to death, and we won't be able to develop out of this. So that was the logic of, you know, Deng Xiaoping at the time. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I'm just saying that's what they were thinking. But the thing is, you look at China, though. I mean, China has got at least four times the landmass as India, you know, four times more landmass than India. And yet, well, you know, India has, you know, now India is the number one most populous country in the world. And, mm-hmm. and China's got a lot of arable land, a lot of, you know, fertile, usable land, whereas India does not. And when I say India, that also includes Bangladesh also.
Yeah, probably closer to three times as much land.
More like what?
I think it's more like three. I know that India's got over a million square miles. China is like three and a half or something million square miles.
Either way, China is much, much larger than India. So China's able to hold a population of 1.4 billion. India is not. I mean, really, I think India and Bangladesh, I think both, those regions of India, they need to, you know, slash their population by at least two thirds, I think, in order for them to be sustainable. At least two thirds.
Yeah, and which might happen. They are behind. They're behind China in terms of what's called the demographic transformation. So China's already got the China had the politically enforced one child policy. Now it no longer has that one child policy, but people aren't having children. Now South Korea, South Korea is their fertility rate has gone like 2.1 is considered sustainable. I mean, that's considered, you would think two, right? Two people having two children, but I guess, you know, with infant mortality and certain other things, 2.1 is considered, you know, some children just aren't fertile or whatever. So typically you think of 2.1 is the fertility rate to maintain a population. And all the countries in Europe are below that, all the countries in East Asia, but some countries are way below that. And South Korea, last time I looked, was 0.8. Now I think it's 0.7. So, I mean, they're just not having kids. Now, I was in South Korea last summer, and the thing is, it's very crowded.
That's lower than Japan's, isn't it?
Than Japan. Japan's like 1.2 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. 1.2.
And, you know, it's very, very crowded. And South Korea, you've got probably close to half the population living in Greater Seoul. And Seoul is just full of skyscrapers like you wouldn't believe.
Does it feel a lot denser than Tokyo, Seoul?
It's pretty similar to Tokyo. I don't know if I mean, I know that they're it's pretty similar to Tokyo. But you see, the thing is, Tokyo, the birth rate, the fertility rate in Tokyo is about 0.8. It's really low in Tokyo. But the thing is, Japan has a lot of outlying areas. Japan has a lot more land than South Korea. It's three or four times as much land as South Korea. And so it's still got a lot of towns where, you know, people live in suburban style houses and they have a car. Not so much two cars. Some places have two cars, but, you know, they have a car and they drive to the super.
It's more spread out. Japan is more spread out than South Korea.
Yeah, it's a lot more spread out. So if you go out to these other prefectures that aren't the major urban areas, the birth rate's not nearly as low. It's still low, but it's not nearly as low. But the thing is, yeah.
Which country is plagued by more of the immigration and diversity? Japan or South Korea, specifically Tokyo or Seoul? Where do you see more foreigners?
And more. There's more, definitely more in Japan. And somebody sent me a little news headline, and some cabinet minister from Japan, I'm not sure what his portfolio was, but was over, I think over in India, either over in India or he was making a little video aimed at Indians saying, come here, you know, come and, yeah.
They're screwed if they do that.
Tokyo has a very large Indian school. There's parts of Tokyo that have kind of an Indian community. It's nothing like you'd see in Britain, So you're getting a certain amount in Japan. It's not huge yet. If you look at like immigration statistics, you will find there's been immigration to Korea, but the immigration to Korea is mostly ethnic. It's ethnic Koreans. From the former Soviet Union in particular, you know, from Uzbekistan, from Kazakhstan.
Even from, there's a Korean region too in China too.
Yes.
In the Northeast in Manchuria.
Yeah. Now, North Korea's got, for East Asia, North Korea probably has the best fertility rate. It's almost ever, it's like 1.8 or something. It's pretty close to.
But their mortality rate though.
Well, when they have a famine, I don't think they've had a famine since the 1990s.
Yeah, as a result of the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, there was a lot of dislocation there. They lost their fuel supply. So they're doing okay. But Japan and South Korea are having a massive problem for them. And if they go the road of immigration, it's curtains. Those societies.
They're screwed. They're screwed if they try to imitate the West, the United States and the European Union. They're screwed.
They're screwed. The languages they're not easy to learn. And the Koreans are no longer using Chinese characters. And so actually you can learn how to read Korean. If you learn the spoken language, you can learn how to read it. But the thing with the Japanese is like really tough to learn. So if they invite in anybody who comes over as an adult, 99% of them will never learn to read or write. So that you're getting an illiterate population. Why would you want to increase illiteracy in your country with a bunch of foreigners? People who are never going to learn, probably won't learn to speak very well, and they're never going to learn to read or write.
Well, the thing is, they don't want to, but it's the New World Order. It's the, you know, the American bloc, you know, of, you know, to take a spin off the Soviet bloc. It's the American bloc that wills it. That's what it is. So, yeah. But, a lot of interesting, definitely interesting developments, you know, different countries and, you know, the, you could say the strengths and the weaknesses, the, you know, the various problems that every country has. I mean, it's all, you know, very interesting to discuss about.
It is. All right. So the global warming, I guess we touched on that to an extent. Like I said, the agenda that they're pushing is a bad agenda, whether or not there's global warming. And so like, I have trouble sometimes. Sometimes I think it's kind of a lazy cop out to insist that a problem doesn't exist when you don't like the proposed solutions to a problem. I think it's, we saw that, for instance, with the whole COVID agenda. And they were doing all this insane stuff. Everybody's got to wear a mask, social distance, lockdown.
The worst being the vaccines. Those are the worst. The Pfizer vaccine, yeah.
And then you'd have people say, well, there's no COVID virus, or there's no virus at all. There's no virus at all. And okay, if we could prove to you there was a virus, would that mean that everybody should take the vaccine?
Of course not. Yeah, I mean, it's all about the the agenda. It, you know, whether there's a problem or not is not beside the point. But it's just, you know, people have a tendency to go to the opposite extreme, and you know, I can understand why. But the problem is, if they go to the opposite extreme and then they're proven wrong, well, then they'll just look like fools. You know, that's the problem. And, you know, of course, the media, the Jewish-dominated media, they love that. They love it when people, you know, go off the deep end so they can say, see, look at them. They're a bunch of crazy people. So, yeah. You know, we have to be very careful, you know, in terms of, you know, when we apply our logic, you know, that it's, you know, according with facts. So that way, you know, we don't lose credibility.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there are any circumstances under which we should take these untested gene therapies that are developed by sinister people. That just doesn't make any sense. There's no, doesn't matter whether there are viruses or not. It doesn't matter. With the global warming thing, you know, Punxsutawney Phil, he made it summer, or he made it spring come early, which I kind of like. Now, obviously, if the climate really, really changes year after year after year, because every years are different. I remember there when I was a kid, a long time ago, before there was global warming or whatever. Sometimes we would have warm, you know, the spring would come early. You know, sometimes it comes early, sometimes it comes late. You know, there's always that variability. But my basic position with the global warming thing is, okay, well, there's this very, very extreme view that there's some sort of tipping point, that there's a tipping. The tipping point is almost certainly BS, that you reach this point where then you get this kind of runaway, loop, like feedback loop effect, and you get runaway, and then Earth turns into Venus and there's no more life. That's BS.
Like, and laughable too.
Well, it's like it's less plausible than Elvis on the moon or something like that. It's but in general, it's like, so, all right, if you, the types of things that are more plausible, like, well, over the next several decades or a couple of centuries, I think it's fair for people to be planning for long periods of time, for multi-generations. There are some people who plan for, who are capable of doing that. Chinese are capable of doing that, and Jews are capable of doing that. But I mean, our people don't seem to be able to think very far in the future, unfortunately. But if it means that the climate of Boston 100 years from now is going to resemble the climate of Washington D.C., is that the end of the world? Well, I guess maybe certain types of insects and certain types of plants aren't going to survive as well, and others are going to invade, and there's going to be dislocation and whatnot. But it's not really the end of the world, A. And then B, to the extent that there's something that we can do about it, well, okay, if it's that important, how about laying off of World War III and laying off of white genocide and screwing the goyim, and, you know, actually white genocide, what about these?
Yeah, how about not starting a nuclear war?
Yeah,
for a start.
How about starting with that, and once we then eventually we could get around to the global warming.
Let's focus on just not having a nuclear, you know, what do you call it, de-escalation, what was the Soviet during the Cold War? What was the term used? The U.S. and Soviets would not strike first. This what?
Well, there was nuclear nonproliferation. There was disarmament. There was arms control negotiation.
Yeah, exactly. How about starting with that? Yeah.
Yeah. What was the word?
I don't know. I guess de-escalation. That's in general speaking. Yeah. How about de-escalation? How about making Israel sign the nonproliferation treaty for a start?
Yeah. How about that?
Sanctioning Israel. You know, at the very least. Well, until they stop, you know, mass murdering innocent civilians in Gaza. And they signed the nuclear nonproliferation treaty. Otherwise, they get no way. But of course, the American Empire is, you know, it's you know, JOG, the Jewish occupied government, is what it is. So we know that's not going to happen. I want to get back to Texas real quick, though. Now, since, you know, this is RBN Studios, and their studio headquarters are down in Texas, and that's where it's being transmitted, being broadcasted out of. Well, I know. There's going to be people down there talking about, the various theories of geoengineering or weather engineering, or these evil people in high places. They're engineering these natural disasters and so forth. And all I want to say about that is Texas seems to be under attack, you know, very lately, whether it's by, you know, extreme weather, whether it's by this wave after wave of third world immigration, you know, crossing the Rio Grande. Or at least, you know, trying to, I don't know how much they've gotten that situation under control. I mean, Abbott seems to be putting up some kind of a show, you know, saying, oh, we're going to block him. I don't know how successful he is, but it's weird because Texas is one of those places, seems to me that, and I just looked this up too. Apparently, a few days ago was Texas Independence Day. That was in, 1836, when the Anglo-Texans, the Anglo-settlers from the United States, from America, back east, declared independence from Mexico, saying that we want to be a separate nation from Mexico. And, you know, of course, in Texas, you know, there's the Alamo, they all lost. They were all slaughtered by the Mexicans, the Anglo, the white Anglo defenders. But, you know, later on, you know, a month later, they won. You know, Sam Houston, the Battle of San Jacinto, he won and kicked out the Mexicans, defeated them. So, you know, I mean, Texas, you know, and of course, Texans are known for, you know, being, you know, resisting, you know, tyranny, you know, come and take it, you know, against, you know, the established powers, whatever, you know, they're known for, you know, kind of that.
Don't mess with Texas. Don't mess with Texas.
Yeah. Don't mess with Texas and so forth. And so, you know, I mean, even though, I mean, despite, you know, the fact that, you know, Texas, I mean, it's only like, what, half Anglo, half white, and half Hispanic Mexican. The Mexican population is increasing, whereas the Anglo population is decreasing. And, you know, despite the fact that most, you know, the white Anglo-Texans, they're mostly evangelical Christians, you know, that's where all the big mega churches are, you know, Joel Osteen, and, you know, there was...
Traveling in a freighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read one. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered from a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious, he almost died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives that were more affordable, he tried Extendivite. Since taking it, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite. Health Simple with Kalwara Shilaji, Fact Bit Number 3. Shilaji is the supreme yoga vaha. Within Ayurveda, Shilaji is the singular substance that towers above all other herbs, herbal minerals, and earth-made adaptogens. Yoga vaha refers to substances that have the ability to synergistically make better and carry other substances to its prescribed destination. In the case of Shilaji, most any herb, food, or mineral is amplified with ionic potential, superimposing superior efficacy with increased cellular energy and absorption rates. One of the best applications for Shilaji is to add a drop or two into your favorite herbal tincture and foodstuff. Simply put, Shilaji makes other substances more effective.
Look for the Gold Mountain and Medical Symbol logo and banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Mexican population is increasing, whereas the Anglo population is decreasing. And, you know, despite the fact that most, you know, the white Anglo-Texans, they're mostly evangelical Christians, you know, that's where all the big mega churches are, you know, Joel Osteen, and, you know, there was a crazy story of a, you know, freaky shooter down there, that's another story. And then there's, you know, all the big mega churches, and it's really the biggest Zionist, Christian Zionist stronghold in America. Yet despite all this, you know, for some reason, the Jewish New World Order still views Texas as a threat to their power, to their complete control over the world. So, I don't know. It's kind of an interesting dynamic to where, you know, despite a shrinking Anglo population and increasing third world population, you know, mostly Latino, despite that the Anglos there pretty much worship the Jews in their Christian evangelical megachurches, despite the fact that their governor's a total Zionist, yet somehow the Jews still view Texas as a threat to their, you know, Jewish hegemony, just as much as they view, you know, Russia and China as a threat.
Yeah, because things are going off the rail. The Jewish power structure cobbled together this unwieldy coalition. And, you know, if they'd taken a go-slow approach, if they'd been more patient, if they'd been more willing for multi-generational planning, then maybe they could have gotten away with it if it wasn't for us meddling kids. But they went too fast, and their coalition is falling apart. They had a bunch of Muslims who were supposed to help disrupt the, for instance, the Christian nature of the United States, as well as the, you know, the white racial nature of the United States. They brought in a bunch of Muslims who don't care about Israel and are going to call it out, even more so in Europe. They indoctrinated all of these women in particular, but also the gays. The gays go along with this too, to, you know, dye their hair blue and get tattoos and facial piercings, and that is a means of being anti-white. But of course, the Israelis are white colonial settlers, and so it's all falling apart. They, like, all these things that they did they've cobbled together something that's not cohesive, and it's yeah. eating itself.
Disorganized. They're disorganized within.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think the crux of, you know, the, you know, this, you know, past week we saw was, you know, that military, you know, soldier, he set himself on fire in front of the Israeli embassy to mm-hmm. protest the what's happening in Gaza. And, you know, whatever, you know, background he is, that no doubt sends a message to the Zionists and to the Jewish establishment.
And we know his background. He was somebody who had been indoctrinated by a lot of anti-white Jewish propaganda. But the thing is, it's not logical. It's not cohesive. So, you know, if you indoctrinate people with this anti-whiteness and say why whites are evil, and then Israel is the epitome of everything that, you know, they say that evil whites or supremacists or Nazis are, and then Israel winds up being the epitome of everything they've been saying with evil. If somebody didn't think this through well enough. But we are running out of time. Do you have any final thoughts?
Well, all I could say is, you know, down with the Jewish New World Order, and long live freedom and the multipolar, the up and coming multipolar world.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds good. That sounds good. I'll go along with that. And thank you for joining me, Cato.
Yes, thank you. And I will talk to you next time.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Google Radio.
Chinatown, my Chinatown, where the lights are low. Hearts that know no other lands, drifting to hell.
Health Simple with Kalwara Shilaji, Fact Bit number 3. Shilaji is the supreme yoga vaha. Within Ayurveda, Shilaji is the singular substance that towers above all other herbs, herbal minerals, and earth-made adaptogens. Yogavaha refers to substances that have the ability to synergistically make better and carry other substances to its prescribed destination. In the case of Shilaji, most any herb, food, or mineral is amplified with ionic potential, superimposing superior efficacy with increased cellular energy and absorption rates. One of the best applications for Shilaji is to add a drop or two into your favorite herbal tincture and foodstuff. Simply put, Shilaji makes other substances more effective.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.